All right, the time is now 10:02. We will start the public meeting for the District of Columbia Board of Ethics and Government Accountability. My name is Tamika Collier. I am here with all of our board members, Shamari Wade, Norma Hutchinson, and Darren Sobin. We therefore have a quorum. I will start with the adoption of the agenda for today. I will make one amendment and remove the report by the Director of Open Government. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, the next item on the agenda is approval of the meeting for January 4, 2008, February 1, 2018, and March 18, 2017. I'll give you a minute to review those meeting minutes.
And Madam Chair, that should be a correction for the March 19, 2018, the meeting minutes.
But the meeting minute itself is correct, right?
Yes.
And I do note for that March 18th meeting that you did make a notation that we took out of order the appeal to the board. So thank you. All right, having reviewed those meeting minutes, all in favor of approving the meeting minutes in block for January 4th, February 1, and March 18th, 2018, please signify by saying aye.
Madam Chair, can I wasn't at the February or the January meetings, so I think I can only vote on the March minutes.
Fair enough. I'll take them separately. First, let's do the January 4th and February 1, 2018 meeting. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Turning now to the March 18th, 2018 meeting minutes. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. We now will have the report from the Director of Government Ethics.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First is an update on our operations. We opened one investigation last month, closed five. We currently have 23 open investigations, and eight investigations have been stayed or are inactive. One is for a Maryland court fugitive case. One is for an OEA case that's pending in DC Superior Court. Four are pending investigations being conducted by the Office of the Inspector General, and two are with the Office of the Attorney General pending Civil False Claims Act complaints. Regarding our publication and reporting obligations, we have no outstanding publication or reporting obligations. We will be publishing our quarterly complaint report for the second quarter of FY18 within a week. And a draft of that report was deposited into the Dropbox for the board's review. We also anticipate completing and uploading, I believe it's our performance measures, into the city administrator's QuickBase database. And is that also the complaint report? Is that going to be uploaded or not? Okay. Training and outreach. Our attorney advisor, Asia Stewart Mitchell, attended a DC Bar CLE on who is the client of the government attorney last week. And additionally, I am enrolled in the public corruption investigation training program that's being conducted locally by SIGI next week from Tuesday through Thursday. Regarding trainings that were conducted by the staff, since the board's last meeting, we conducted only five training sessions, considerably less than the 14 before our prior meeting, although there was a compressed time frame between the board's two meetings this time. The trainings consisted of two new employee orientations, two MSS trainings, and a board and commission training at ABRA. Additionally, I gave a presentation to the Office of the Inspector General as Medicaid Fraud Control Unit to educate their staff on the auditing methods used by the Payment Error Rate Measurement Program to identify overpayments in the Medicaid and CHIP programs based upon my last position at CNI.
Do they have a new director of Mofuku now?
They do. It's Marcus Weeks. He was my deputy.
Oh, that's right. I recognize the name.
Yep. I'd realized after being away from that my last position.
Everybody gets the emergency alert on cell phone.
Apparently.
Like Hawaii.
I had realized after being away from my last position a few months, that knowledge that I had acquired was getting old and dusty and in danger of being lost altogether. So I thought it was incumbent upon me to block off a little time to go over and give them that information while I still remember.
I know the feeling, Director.
Let's see here. Advisory opinions and advice. We issued approximately 51 informal advice opinions, down from 90 reported at the last meeting. However, that was only over a two-week period of time, and we received no formal advice requests and issued no formal advice opinions since the board's last meeting. Ethics legislation, comprehensive code of conduct. We are not aware of any recent developments with respect to ethics legislation or the CCC. Rulemaking. In the Dropbox, we have uploaded a draft rulemaking to adopt procedures for informal show cause hearings to be used in conjunction with our ministerial schedule of fines. We have also included with that draft a revised schedule of fines that includes a reference to the statutory or regulatory provision for which the fine is being imposed. We have incorporated comments received at the board's last meeting that, as an alternative, would permit a respondent to state his or her position in writing rather than having to appear in person at a hearing, and we are asking that the board adopt this rulemaking today.
Mr. Director, could you just, since I'm a little late to the game on the whole rulemaking thing, and so I understand the context, it came originally from the model used by the Board of Elections, right?
Right, the Office of Campaign Finance.
Office of Campaign Finance, okay. And what is your vision of how it would be used at Vega, considering that we already have a statutory track and rules that support the statutory track?
Sure. Our thought is just to provide a little bit more structure to show the path that we would take in executing or considering the issuance of ministerial fines under the director's discretion. And so we thought it would be appropriate to provide written notice to the potential subject of that ministerial fine regarding why it was being considered, give them the opportunity to present evidence that might demonstrate why a fine should not be imposed.
So is this a nod to due process? Instead of you just imposing a fine, you're giving them a chance to answer for it?
Precisely.
And these would be in the types of violations that, what, in your view, would not rise to the level of charging it as an NOV with the board?
Correct. I mean, one thing that I've spent the past few weeks doing is mapping out some workflows for us in Visio, the way I envision our operations being conducted with decision points where we need to evaluate whether it's in the interest of judicial economy to open an investigation, whether the public's interest is such that it is important to proceed to a notice of violation with an adversarial hearing before the board, and some instances where the interest of judicial economy would be best served by proceeding with a ministerial fine. So the thought is to map that out so that we understand how we make those determinations and the board understands how we're going to make those determinations moving forward.
And would negotiated dispositions be a part of this? For instance, if somebody comes in and you're imposing a fine on them, they're like, yeah, you know what, I filed it late or I didn't state this on it. Would you do it through a negotiated disposition?
Yeah, the way the workflow is currently mapped is the first decision point is, does it appear that there was a violation of the code of conduct? And then the second decision point is whether the respondent is willing to entertain a negotiated disposition. Mm-hmm. And only if they're not willing to do that would we move on to the ministerial fine or an adversarial hearing.
I see. Okay. That makes sense. So no negotiated disposition, you impose the fine, they appeal it, and then we jump back to the track of an NOV.
Correct.
Sort of, right? Okay. Good. Yeah, that'll actually, that's good for the board. It'll take less time for the board to, you know, have to sit and listen to every little de minimis offense and violation.
Yeah, we thought that it made more sense to go ahead and use those ministerial fine powers and reserve the full adversarial hearing before the board for only those instances where it appeared that the public's interest was such that a public airing of the evidence was warranted.
Right, it's really a good improvement compared to where we started this 5 years ago when we couldn't even do a negotiated disposition and every offense had to go to a full adversarial hearing with the board. So good. I like it.
Yeah.
All right, do we have any more questions on the rulemaking?
We just need to sign, but Madam Chair, we're going to need the board to sign the rulemaking, transmittal form, but I have to make a correction first, so we'll bring it down before the meeting is over.
Okay.
That's okay.
All right, hearing no more questions on the rulemaking, all in favor of approving the rulemaking as in the form that's in the drop box, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Thank you. Next item on the agenda is the budget. As you all probably are aware, our budget oversight hearing will be held before the Council's Committee on the Judiciary and Public Safety on Friday, April 13th at 10:30 a.m. in room 123 of the Wilson Building. We're the third agency on the list, and we have also continued to hold our monthly budget meetings with the OFM. Staffing. We have...
Talk at all about the O-type funds? And-
yes. I've prepared a letter to address the mayor's apparent interest in reallocating those funds, and I will send that out by email today. I sent it out for comment earlier in the week. Jack and Brian looked at it, and I think it strikes an appropriate tone of expressing concern and disagreement with the move, while also setting forth the our take on why it is unwise and why the board's financial autonomy is something that should be promoted, and that this proposal is actually a step in the wrong direction.
And have you had a chance to look at the mayor's proposed budget?
I have. For fiscal 19?
Yes.
Yes, I've looked at it.
And how does it square with what we're asking
for? It squares with what was submitted, what we submitted in the fall. From my observation, it looks like it's probably about $44,000 on the personnel services side, lower than I would like to fund the investigative auditor and program specialist position. And to that extent, I submitted a supplemental spreadsheet for the council's consideration at the hearing next week to explain how my take on our staffing needs differs from what was submitted in the fall and what was included in the mayor's budget. And that segues nicely into the next item on the agenda, which is staffing. We have two positions that are currently vacant, the new program specialist position and the new investigative auditor position. DCHR is currently reviewing a revised PD for the program specialist and my draft PD for the investigative auditor role. The investigative auditor position description was based largely on similar positions that are used by the City of Philadelphia and the State of California, and the goal is to find someone with the skills, education, and background to be able to perform both audits of the financial disclosure statements and lobbyist activity reports, as well as investigative functions. And I'm still waiting for feedback on that from DCHR.
What's the timeline on this? It seems to have been taking a long time.
It was, because it was creating something completely from scratch, but I think that the way we have done things in the past as far as submitting the position descriptions for DCHR's consideration may have not been as efficient as it needed to be, because it was going from Sandra as our administrative officer to her contacts at DCHR, and they would then elevate their questions to their supervisor, Tashima Pedrozo, who I used to work with at the OIG. And so now I'm submitting those directly from my desk to Toshima to try to expedite the process.
Okay.
Okay. And that segues into another point, which is unfortunately, must regret to inform the board that we do have a third position that is going to be coming vacant on Monday. Our attorney advisor, Janet Foster, is unfortunately going to be leaving us to join the staff of the House of Representatives Ethics Office. We will greatly miss her contributions. She has been a very valuable member of our staff. Hate to see her leave, but understand that everybody has to look out after their own professional career goals. So wanted to let the board know that this is going to be Janet's last meeting before the board.
And I had the great privilege of hiring Ms. Foster into the office, for at least the time that I was director, I was more than happy with her work, her diligence, her writing, her litigation skills. It will be a huge loss to us, a huge gain for the House, but these days I think the federal government needs as much help as it can get, so I think we can make this little sacrifice here and say a fond farewell to Ms. Foster, and I hope you'll always be part of the Bega family.
Congratulations, Ms. Foster.
And regarding Ms. Foster's soon-to-be vacant position, DCHR has already approved a revised PD for that position. Toshima indicated to me that it would be posted no later than today. And we also submitted a list of ranking factor questions so that it can be posted on the Career Services Board and give us a little bit kind of a mathematical way to examine the folks' qualifications up front. Because we're having so many vacancies at a crucial time in the calendar with the FDS program filing season getting ready to start and the lobbyist filing season beginning, I believe, on July 1st, we are willing and going to explore possibly bringing on temporary staff to alleviate our burden, as well as sort of offshoring some of the or outsourcing some of the functions that we previously handled in-house, such as the mailings of the notices to all the FDS filers. We obtained a couple of quotes to have a third-party mail merge service take care of that, so our folks don't have to mess with it, and we can focus on our investigations doing what we do best. Somewhere around $3,000 to get that done, which I think is a wise investment, especially considering our resource constraints right now.
I agree.
And that it's just, to me, it makes more sense. It makes more sense. I've talked to our staff members who had some feedback to give me regarding their experiences with some of the temporary staff that we brought on board in previous cycles, and we're going to reach out to at least one of those folks to see if they are available and interested in coming back to help us. Additionally, some bandwidth should be coming available this summer. We have been approved for a leadership program intern at no cost to Bega. Sandra and I are going to a mandatory meeting for that program tomorrow afternoon to learn more about the requirements. But we've already been approved, and like I said, it's a free resource, so we're pretty excited about that.
Is this college, high school?
I don't know if it's college or I thought it was. And my recollection may be a little off, but I thought it was like recent college graduates. I don't think it was necessarily college students, but I can I'll find out more and let the board know. Okay, litigation, status of pending cases. The first one is Garen Price. Mr. Price has filed his brief. The government has requested an extension to file its brief, which was due on Tuesday, March 20th, 2018. Charlene Dickens' petition was dismissed by the Court of Appeals on March 2nd, 2018. Edwin Adokwe.
You know the basis for the dismissal?
I cannot recall.
Brian?
Janet's saying it was suicide. The Court of Appeals dismissed it. But I don't know, though.
No order?
Might have been for failure to.
Maybe.
And the absence of a written order is a recurring theme, apparently, because the same situation exists in Mr. Adokwe's case. His petition was dismissed by Judge Holman on March 9th, but as of yesterday, there was still no written final order of record in the clerk's office. Larry Hicks, this is an enforcement collection action filed to reduce the board's $20,000 fine to judgment. The board imposed the fine in February of 2014. Mr. Hicks appealed that finding to the Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals. With his judicial remedies exhausted, the hearing was set for February 8th. And on Monday, April 2nd, the court dismissed this matter without prejudice at the government's request. It is anticipated that the case will be refiled once the record has been assembled. And lastly, is Claudia Barber versus Bega OOG. There have been no new developments in this case. It was filed on February 9th, 2018, challenging an opinion issued by the Office of Open Government concluding that OOG had no authority to independently nullify actions taken during meetings of public bodies. The OAG has filed a motion to dismiss on the basis that the OOG decision was issued under the authority of the Open Meetings Act, not the Comprehensive Merit Personnel Act, which was the statute under which this lawsuit was classified by the court. The plaintiff has filed an objection to that motion to dismiss as well, but the court hasn't ruled on it yet. Next item on the agenda is lobbyist financial disclosure matters. We're still working to ensure that all non-compliant public financial disclosure statement filers for calendar year 2017 file their forms via our e-filing system. And with the new financial disclosure season for calendar year 2018 approaching, we have begun the early stages of preparation. All filer lists were due to us on March 1st. To date, we've received 97 of the 102 public lists due and 89 of the 102 confidential lists due. And we're currently contacting the ethics counselors responsible for the outstanding lists and asking them to submit those lists immediately.
My recollection is that's a huge improvement in agency compliance from years past.
Yep. I mean, you look
what
at that.
What would you attribute that to?
I would say probably Asia's diligence. I mean, she's been very energetic and involved in beating that information out of the agency. So I think any credit for that statistical improvement belongs to Asia.
Good. Is there a timeline for when you're sending out the login information? And has the system been tested?
The system has been tested. We've been working with Octo make some last minute, I would say, adjustments. And we're also planning at some point in the next week or so to have a second testing session with members of the public. Asia, again, reached out to agency ethics counselors and assembled a team of folks who are willing to serve as beta testers to go in and provide us with their feedback regarding their experience and any suggested changes that they might recommend. Not saying that we could get those changes implemented before the current filing season, but we thought it was important for them to at least have the opportunity to give us their feedback and recognize that their feedback is important to us. Lobbyists. During the board's last meeting, our auditor reported that he was in the process of verifying the nonprofit status of all organizations that were paying $50 for their registrations as opposed to the full $250 registration fee. He identified a total of 83 organizations whose eligibility needed to be verified. 36 of those organizations were identified by the auditor as being in violation. Three of those 36 had their 501c3 status revoked by the IRS within the last year. 29 of those entities were 501c5, 501c6, or 501c9 organizations that were not eligible for the $200 credit. And four organizations were not found on the IRS website, GuideStar, or Nonprofit Explorer. Ishmael is following up with those organizations that he could not find and requesting that they provide their IRS determination letters to verify their eligibility for the reduced registration fee. The auditor has recommended that we send those registrants who are in violation letters to notify them and to request reimbursement of the $200 credit from the date that they originally filed their registration paperwork incorrectly. The auditor also recommends that we research BEGA's authority to assess interest on the unpaid balance of the firm's registration fees and to impose a penalty against them for their incorrect filing decisions.
Do we impose interest? Do we assess interest on any other fine?
I've not seen any paperwork that shows that we have done that in the past. I know that you're entitled to it from a matter of once it's reduced to judgment, but I am not familiar with the district's rules regarding pre-judgment interest. And like I said, I have not seen anything paperwork-wise showing that BEGA has attempted to accrue interest in other situations.
I can speak to that. Mr. Grimaldi can also, from our days in the Attorney General's office. Generally speaking, pre-judgment interest is not available. And we've never charged interest on a fine that we've issued from this office.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is non-confidential investigations. The first one is Henry Rochelle Wilson. There have been no new developments in this case. This is a formal investigation we discussed at the last meeting involving a former Aussie employee who, before her separation from the district government, failed to submit full, accurate, and complete financial disclosure forms for three consecutive years. Our negotiations with Ms. Wilson were not successful. We believe this is an appropriate case for the director to consider imposing a ministerial fine on the respondent. We believe this would be a good first test use of the new rules, but we wanted to wait in moving forward until the board officially voted to approve those rules and we can get them published. And once that happens, we'll be moving forward with the process. The next step in that process is we're going to send Ms. Wilson a notice to show cause why the director should not impose a fine against her due to her willful failure to file for three consecutive years. And following her response, we will make written findings and issue a decision that can be appealed to the board consistent with those rules. Next non-confidential investigation on the agenda is Henry Courtney Snowden. This is an investigation referred by the Office of the Inspector General involving the Deputy Mayor for Greater Economic Opportunity. According to the OIG's report of investigation, on three occasions in late summer 2015, Ms. Snowden used government resources for other than official business and ordered, directed, or requested subordinate employees to perform personal services in violation of DPM Section 1807.1B and C. We believe we have reached an agreement in principle for a negotiated disposition in this matter, but Ms. Snowden and her counsel are still reviewing our draft language. The next item on the agenda for non-confidential investigations are two matters that are related to one another. Number 1031-016, NRA Antoine Wilson, and 1031-017, NRA Jennifer Niles. Pursuant to DC Official Code Section 1-1162.12A, we opened preliminary investigations into whether former Chancellor Antoine Wilson and former Deputy Mayor Jennifer Niles violated the code of conduct by transferring the Chancellor's daughter to an out-of-boundary school after the start of school year 2017-2018. The board authorized this as a formal investigation at its last meeting, and in the interim, we have interviewed the former chancellor, and we have scheduled an interview with the deputy mayor for Monday. Oh. And that is all of the items on the agenda for my report.
Did you answer the question about when our materials were going out about the FDS filing?
I think we're shooting for Friday, April 13th.
And when is the filing deadline?
May 15th.
May 15th.
Got it. Completely missed that exchange. What was the answer?
Oh, we're going to plan on sending notice Friday, April 13th.
Friday, April 13th. Got it. All right, that's all the public. That's all the we have for the public. We will turn now to open it up to public comment. I will remind everyone that each public comment should be limited to 3 minutes. You want to start with Mrs. Sindrum?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, all. Michael Sindrum, disabled veteran, served our country more than most. Madam Chair, I got to tell you, my spirit is vexed. It's a sad indictment on the Board of Ethics, Government Accountability when those government employees are ethical and are terminated for being ethical. I'm speaking about Christopher Weaver and Tracy Hughes. They've done nothing more than follow the law and do their job to a T, in fact, crossing all T's and dotting all I's. And that, having been said and having done so, are now fired. That puts a chilling effect, Madam Chair, on all of those concerned that when you do your job, right, and the marching order is given by a superior official, your boss, what have you, you know, you circumvent the law and contract steering and so on, you're up to be fired at the mayor's pleasure. That ought not be. A true leader will say, hey, I made a mistake, and reinstate the ethical players, namely Christopher Weaver and Tracy Hughes. Again, when the marching orders go out on the Fort Myers contractual debacle, contract steering, you know, we give it to a given contractor because they pour godzillions of money into our coffers, and that's the order given. And again, the ethical employees involved is not going to do it. That's not fair play. It's not the law. And so I'm going to defer to you, Madam Chair, to challenge the mayor and say the termination under your watch of Tracy Hughes is a very bad move, very bad. And remind the mayor, she's not out of the woods yet. She's an incumbent. She doesn't have an opponent yet. But run, Vince, run. Come the election time, Mayor Gray may very well toss his hat in the ring, and that will give fodder for him to say, hey, where's the ethicality, Tracy Hughes and Christopher Weaver? Not good, Madam Chair. And again, this is happening under your watch. So you got a part to play in this, okay?
Thank you,
any
Mr.
questions,
Sindrum.
I'd be delighted to field them now.
No questions for you, Mr. Sindrum, but thank you for your input. I will note for the record that Tracy Hughes was not terminated, and the mayor was not involved at all in the decision whether to reappoint Tracy Hughes.
Well, in light of that, Madam Chair, if I may, let me ask you, why then has not Tracy Hughes been reinstated? She's done an excellent job, above and beyond the call of duty.
Mr. Sindrum, I will refer you to the public testimony of the board at the oversight hearing, but again, I thank you for your comments. Any other public comment? All right. I now will entertain a motion to move this body into executive session to discuss ongoing confidential investigations pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-575B to consult with an attorney to obtain legal advice and preserve the attorney-client privilege between an attorney and a public body pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-57B4A to discuss personnel matters including the appointment, employment, assignment, promotion, performance, evaluation, compensation, discipline, demotion, removal, or resignation of government appointees, employees, or officials pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-575B10, and to deliberate on a decision in which the Ethics Board will exercise quasi-judicial functions pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-575B13.
So moved.
All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The time is now 10:36. We're now in executive session. All right, the time is now 11:04, and we are back on the public record. The board has one matter to report out. We have appointed Brian Flowers as the interim OOG director effective 23 April.
until we hire a new director. The next board member will, the next board meeting will be May 3rd at 10 a.m. This meeting is now adjourned. Thank you.